I want to begin by saying thank you to Pastor Hafhild for the opportunity to share with you this morning, having my wife Lena tell the story for the children and my being up here preaching, and it seems like old times when we were pastoring together. Just several years ago, the staff at Union College invited us to come and teach and be a part of the religion faculty, so we've transitioned from the pastorate into the classroom, and yet our heart is very much in the local church, because that is where ministry happens. So it is a pleasure this morning to spend time with you in God's Word. But before we open, shall we bow and ask for God's Spirit? Holy Father, we want to know your will. We want to see your face. We need to have our lives touched by the power of your eternal gospel. As we turn to your word to find direction for our lives in this world in which we live, send your spirit. Touch my lips. Touch the ears of the hearers. And may the meditation of our hearts be acceptable in your sight. Is our prayer. In Jesus' name we ask. Amen. 69 years ago, this very month, General Dwight David Eisenhower took the job of liberating Europe from the Axis forces of Nazi Germany. Just the Christmas Eve before, had given General Eisenhower the job. You are the man who will make the plans to end the war and free occupied Europe. Just several weeks prior to that, Hitler himself had given another man the job to defend the occupied territories of Europe. General Rommel was given the task of protecting 2,000 miles of coastline from what everyone knew was going to be an invasion. And so the two men started making plans. One knowing what would happen, the other trying to trick that man with what would happen. But both people knew that one thing was certain. There would be an invasion. Of that, there was no doubt. There would come a day when forces would load up on boats, when forces would load up on planes, and they would cross that English Channel, and a landing would be made. There was no doubt in everyone's mind. But what to do in the meantime? Plans were made. Counterplans were made. Tricks were set up. Whole armies were fabricated out of cardboard. Agents were sent across the channel. Radios were set up to intercept signals that were being sent. Everything was played as if it was real, and yet you never knew if that was the real plan or not. Rommel couldn't know. There was a double agent that was given the task of working both sides, and thankfully for the Allied forces, he played his role so well that the Germans believed him, and he fabricated a story of an entire false army. After the invasion actually did happen, Rommel was still so convinced about that false army, he held forces to the north, convinced that that initial attack, invasion, was just the decoy. The deception was there. But the real question was, when would it happen? When would it happen? If we know when, we'll be ready. When will this event happen? Well, as fate would have it, or if you believe in God, as God would have it, on the night of June 5, those forces did start to load up in those boats. When those forces did start to load into those planes and begin their crossing of the English Channel, Hitler was sleeping with his girlfriend, and Rommel was away on vacation. They did not know when. And so when the attack came, though they were in a sense prepared, yet they were in another sense wholly unprepared. The concept of waiting, waiting and waiting, is so important for us today. I've titled our time together this morning, The Wait. The Wait. You heard the disciples' question. Thank you, Matthew, for reading that for us this morning. As Jesus came out of the temple, and this is the last time, and was going away, his disciples came to point out to him the buildings of the temple. Then he asked them, "You see all these things, do you not? Truly I tell you, not one stone will be left here upon another. All will be thrown down." Can you imagine how shocking that would be for the disciples? Not one stone will be left. Do you know those stones still exist today? The foundation of Herod's temple was amazing. 30 feet long. Stones this wide and this tall. Thousands of men to move them, Jesus says. Not one stone left upon another. And what do you think the disciples' reaction is? Wow. When is that going to happen? When? They hear about an astounding event and they have one question. Tell us, when will this be? When will it happen? Aren't you like that today? Anybody had some amazing event planned? You have a great idea, or maybe your friend has a great idea, your family member has a great idea, and you tell them, this is what we're going to do, and what do they ask? When's it going to be? When? When? What good is it to know of a grand event and not know when? It seems to us to be a no-brainer that you cannot have plans for anything major if you don't know when. The disciples asked the question, when? Jesus proceeds to answer their question with a series of signs, warnings, and then he jumps and transitions into parables for these disciples. They want to know when, and what does Jesus say? You need to love the unlovable. You need to feed the naked. You need to go visit the one in prison. The disciples want to know when. And what does Jesus say? Invest your talents. Don't leave one stone unturned with what God has given you to work for His kingdom. They want to know when. What does Jesus say? Oh, the coming will be like a wedding. A bridegroom is late. And those who are waiting to accompany him, the virgins, when is he coming? When is he coming? Jesus doesn't answer when. He says, oh, they weren't ready. You know the parables, right? Matthew 25. Jesus is answering this when. The disciples want to know when, and he answers with, feed the homeless, clothe the naked, use your talents for Jesus, have your oil ready. But he never says when. Our verse today that becomes the focus of our time this morning is right in the middle between Jesus' discussions of signs and Jesus' recording of these parables to his disciples. And he says these astounding words, but about that day and hour, no one knows. Matthew chapter 24, verse 36. Jesus reveals to us that when Jesus will come is the biggest secret in the entire universe. You see, when Jesus was ready to come the first time, angels were sent, Prophecies were given. Visions were placed in people's minds. Words were written. This is the time. And so Paul can say, in the fullness of time, God sent forth his son, born of a woman. But the second time, the disciples want to know when. And Jesus says, care for the needy. Clothe the sick. Use your talents for the kingdom. Don't forget that you will have to wait. Don't let your oil go out. The disciples want to know when, and Jesus says, sorry. What were his words? Verse 36, chapter 24. But about that day and hour, no one knows, neither the angels of heaven. Gabriel was sent to give the prophecy of the first time. Jesus says the second time, Gabriel doesn't even know. The angels of heaven do not know. Some versions of the Bible even add, not even the Son, but the Father alone. The question then comes to us today. Why? Why does Jesus say, you can't know when I am coming back? You cannot know when the Son of Man will return. I will give no prophecy. Angels will give no messages. No one can know. Before we answer that question or seek to find something in the text, I want you to reflect on the fact that there are two things that our short little verse here does tell us. And that is, first of all, we don't know. We must accept that fact. We do not know. Not properly interpreting that verse was the source of the Millerite disappointment. Not internalizing this principle led thousands of people to give up their jobs, leave their fields unplanted, and hope for the soon coming of Jesus, because they didn't have this verse properly in mind. So, we don't know. We don't know. That's the first thing the verse tells us. But it tells us something else. And sometimes we forget this. And that is, while we don't know, there is somebody who does. Okay? There is somebody who knows right now when Jesus will come back. There is somebody who knew 2,000 years ago when Jesus would come back. And sometimes we look at our world and we think, what is happening? Where is God? Does he not know how bad things are? And then we look at ourselves and we say, wow, I need to get ready. I'm not doing enough. Let me get involved. Maybe if I get involved, then Jesus will come quicker. What does Jesus say? Somebody knows the day. Somebody knows. If somebody knows, tell me, is it changing? No. Jesus says somebody knows that day and hour. Somebody knows. That means what you and I do will not make a difference on that day. We will be able to participate, and I will talk about that because I know you may be a little uncomfortable with believing that what I do doesn't change. But let me remind you what Jesus said this final week of his life on earth. What does he tell the priests and rulers when they tell him, make the people be quiet? Jesus says, if they're quiet, the rocks will cry out. Jesus tells the Israelites, if you fail to be Abraham's seed, I'll raise up children of Abraham from these stones. All right? God is not sitting around twiddling his thumbs saying, when will my people get it right? You know, I'm just so tired of sitting here in heaven. I'd like to come back, but my people won't do anything. Let me tell you, God has a plan. God has a plan that was made from the foundation of the world, and Jesus here before the cross says, there is a day when I will return, and somebody knows when it is. That's the Father. There is a day. but you can't know it. You can't know it. There is a day that is set, but I'm sorry, I cannot tell you. The angels don't even get to know. Father alone knows. And so we return to our question, why? Why is it that the date is set, that the Father knows, and yet he turns to us and says, you can't know. You cannot know. Don't you understand? It will destroy you if you know. He doesn't add that, but if we start to look and probe, we can realize there must be something very powerful in knowing the date. It must have a negative impact on my relationship with God if I know the date. Because if it was good for me, the Father withholds nothing good. He has withheld this, though. He has said, you cannot know. So we know it must be for our good. It must be for our good. I offer up two points for why Jesus says you cannot know. Point number one is it makes it harder to join. Now, you may respond and say, well, that seems a little bit counterintuitive. Aren't we trying to get people to join? Why would Jesus and God the Father have a plan that made it more difficult to join? Well, turn your minds back again to the beginnings of our Adventist church and 1844 and the Millerite experience that led up to that in the preceding years to 1844. What happened as people started to hear this truth that Jesus was coming again? Get your lives ready because Jesus is coming. He's coming. And at first the time frame was just 1843 to 1844. And then as they got closer, they started to pin it down even into a narrower time frame. And it finally got to the end when they said, this is it, October 22, 1844. Jesus will show up in the clouds of glory. Did people respond? You better believe it. Don't you want to be saved? Amen. Yeah, people heard the message. Jesus is coming soon, and thousands responded. They gave their lives. They quit planting their farms. They quit their jobs. They preached the message. Jesus is coming soon. And then something quite strange happened. He didn't show up. What happened to those thousands of people who had responded to the call that Jesus was coming soon, and then he didn't show up? How true was their faith? How strong was their hope? Within a few days, the movement was shattered. And our church grew up from a handful of people. I could take just the first couple of rows here, and you would be the beginnings of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, of what was left of the people who had the fervent hope that Jesus was coming soon. Jesus, I believe, in his wisdom, allowed us as his final church to have our beginnings with a failure related to time. Because people will join if they know the date. We will do it. We will sign up. In fact, I'll quit my job right now if I know Jesus is coming next week. Even if he's coming next month, I'll probably sell everything. And then I'll go to the foreign mission fields. I'll tell everybody. Maybe even in a year I'd be willing to do it. Sacrifice everything. But what about if I don't know when? What if it might not be when I'm alive? What if I might die before he comes? How willing am I to get involved in such a movement as that? You see, you forget how easily we join up a movement when there is a fight to be fought and we know that we can do something. Right? I love the story of this old ship, a coal ship, supply ship, Spanish-American War. There was a lieutenant, and he had an idea. He was an engineer, and the American forces were facing off with the Spanish forces, and they were there on that island, Santiago de Cuba, and there was a bay there on the south shore of Cuba, and the Spanish troops with their armada was holed up inside that bay. That bay had a narrow entrance to it. large bay inside but a narrower entrance, and there were forts on either side, and their guns were trained right there on the entrance. And the American forces knew, well, we can't get in there. If we go marching in there with our ships, they'll be blown up. So this lieutenant, Hobson by name, he comes up with an idea. Hey, let's take this old coal ship, the Merrimack, and let's rig it up with explosives. And we'll, under cover of night, we'll sail it in, pilot it into the entrance to that bay, blow it up right there in the center of the channel, and we'll have locked the Spanish Armada inside the bay. Then we don't have to worry about them. Seemed like a brilliant plan. Only problem is, I need somebody to help blow this thing up, right? So he goes to the admiral in charge, says, hey, here's my plan. I think I can do it. I need six guys, six sailors, who will say, I'll go. I'll be a part of that mission to take that coal ship right into the middle of that channel, right between the guns of the enemy, and light the fuses and blow that thing up to sink it right down to the bottom and block that channel. I just need six guys. He goes to the men on the Merrimack, and do you know how many of those several hundred respond? All of them. He said, I only need six. Come on. I can't take 200. Six. No. They have all kinds of ways to narrow the group down. He goes to another ship in their fleet in New York, and he says, hey, I need a couple more. He took four from the Merrimack. I need a couple more. He got one or two from them. You know how many wanted to go? Again, all of them. The Iowa, another ship there in their fleet. He goes to there. I need one more from you. All sign up. The guy who loses the coin toss of the last two that were left, he tells the guy who won the right to go on that ship where he probably would lose his life, he says, I'll give you $50 to go. You see, when men have a war to fight, glory is to be won, it doesn't matter if they die. They'll sign up. There's a war to be won. They're happy to sign up, even if it means the loss of their life. Jesus knows that. He knows if we've got glory to be achieved right now, I'll sign up. But what if Hobson had gone to those sailors and you said, you know what? I need some men to sign up. I'm not sure if you'll ever live to see the assignment, right? You're going to be on board with this vision that I've got, this plan that I've got, but you know, it may be so far out in the future, you'll never see it happen. How many men are going to be wanting to be involved? You know, all of a sudden it's like, well, you know, I got other things going on. I don't even know if it's that important. Who knows when it'll happen? You see, when you do not know when you don't have it right now in front of you, it becomes distant. And then, whether you really want it or not, becomes front and central. Now you have to choose, will I join the cause when I might not even see it happen? When I might not even live to the fulfillment? Am I really ready to give my life for something, invest in it, and then go to the grave? Hey, did you read the words of our hymn this morning? Oh, brother, be faithful. Soon Jesus will come. Who wrote those words? Uriah Smith. Did you note the date for his death? 1903. More than 100 years ago. Will you sign up when you may not see the mission take place? Jesus says you can't know, because if you know, too many people will sign up. Too many people will join, and we won't have people who really have the heart of the kingdom in their minds and in their hearts. So he says you can't know. I'm sorry, you cannot know. It could happen while you're alive. It may not. It matters not. The time is not important. You need to realize you can't know. You can't know. The second thing, besides making it harder for people to sign up, is it strengthens us not to know. It strengthens us not to know. Paul says these words in chapter 8 of the book of Romans. Verse 24, he says, we are saved by hope. Can you imagine such a concept? We always say we're saved by what? Faith, grace. Paul says there in verse 24, we are saved by hope. And then he continues, but hope that is seen is no hope at all. So God says to us, there is something about you having to hope for the kingdom that will build a character in you that will enable you to withstand the final moments of Earth's history. Ellen White talks about it. She talks how they, in the early Advent movement, had expected that Jesus would soon come after 844. And then she explains there in Spiritual Gifts, Volume 2, that if Jesus had come right away, there would not have been time for the development of their character. You see, character development takes time. It takes time. You have to say, I love you, Jesus, when you're 5. You have to say, I love you, Jesus, when you're 15. And I love you, Jesus, when you're 25. And still, when you're 55, 65, and 75, there is a growth, and you know it, right? You that have been in the church a long time, you know what I'm talking about. You know how your faith is strengthened over the years as you maintain that faith, as you hold it in the midst of awful trials of life. You know how it strengthens your character, draws you closer to God when you have to wait and you wonder and you cry out with the saints under the altar, how long? How long? And yet there is something in that cry that makes you stronger, that increases your hope. And Paul says, by this hope we are saved. Two things. It makes it more difficult to join, and it strengthens the character of those who do. I leave you with one story. Billy Harris was that pilot's name. Graduated from a high school, early 40s of the 20th century. Had no thoughts of becoming a pilot, but there was a war going on. And in order for a war to take place, lives are needed. And so young Billy's number was drawn, and he was assigned to the Air Cadets. Learned to fly there in Oklahoma, for special training down to Florida. A U-boat sunk a ship full of pilots, and so he was rushed out of his aviator's training and sent over to England. Prepare for the invasion to liberate Europe. He's part of the invasion. He starts flying, instead of the bombing runs that he had been flying earlier in his P-51, he starts flying strafing runs as the troops are making their way up from that Normandy beach and into the inland and pressing towards Paris and then up towards Germany. During one of those runs, just a few weeks after that June 6th morning of the invasion, Billy's plane goes down. Nobody seems to know what happens to him, though. You see, before he had shipped out, he had hurried back home to Oklahoma to marry his high school sweetheart. They have a couple weeks together, and then he's gone. And she sits at home. Finally, sometime after his disappearance, she gets a notification from the Army, your husband's missing in action. We don't know if he's dead. We don't know if he's alive. We don't know what happened at all. We just don't know. Well, what is a young bride to do? Wait. She has no choice. Wait. The waiting turns from weeks to months, and the end of the war then comes, and still she waits. The Army has nothing to say. We don't know. He's missing in action. Years turn into decades. She decides, I made a vow. I made a promise. Till death do us part. I don't know what happened to my Billy. And so Peggy waits. And she waits. Finally, 21st century dawns, and her cousin, he says, this is just crazy. How is it that nobody knows what happened to this young man? And so he writes a letter to the war archives. And what do you know? He gets a reply for them. Oh, yes, Billy Harris is buried right here in the Normandy American Cemetery and Memorial on such and such a row and such an aisle. Takes the letter to Billy's wife and says, here it is. He was killed. And here's where he's buried. This is in 2005. She had just prior to that written to her senator to ask, can you find out what happened to my husband? He's listed as missing in action. The government official writes back, we have no additional information. They didn't know. And so she waited and she waited and she waited. And she finally finds out as an older lady, my husband was killed in that war. But that's not the end of the story. You see, because when she found out that her husband was alive, do you know what she wanted? Not alive, but had died. You know what she wanted? She wanted to go see the grave. She wanted to visit the cemetery where her husband had been buried all these years that she had been waiting for. She goes there. As the last surviving widow, they hadn't had a visitor from a surviving widow in years. From that war to the people buried in that cemetery. And she goes. She gets there. Do you know what she finds? The grave is decorated. Who's decorating my husband's grave? I didn't even know he was dead, and somebody has been decorating his grave. Do you know what she finds out? There's a little village there in northern France. Levant is the name. And Billy's plane went down right over that village. And with the last ounce of strength in his life, he managed to maneuver that plane away from the buildings that were in the center of the village and hit the trees right on the edge of that village. There was a young boy in that village who ran over to the aircraft and was with Billy when he died. The members, citizens of that town, took his body. They buried it in their local cemetery. The war was over and people finally found out who he was. They took him to the cemetery there at Normandy above Omaha Beach, and they buried him in the Canadian section because his middle initial was D and then Harris, and the Frenchman thought he must be Canadian with the last name of De Harris. Nobody knew. She finds out that village, three times a year, has a parade. And they march down a street by the name of Billy Harris Place. And they lay flowers at their World War II memorial. And they read the citation. And when they come to his name, the townsfolk's eyes well up in tears. Because this man had used his last drops of blood to avoid their houses. When he was moved over to the Normandy Cemetery, they still would go every year, put flowers on his grave. They assumed he had no family because no family showed up. She didn't know what had happened and waited all these years, waiting, waiting, and still waiting. When her hope seemed like there was no hope at all, she found out that her Billy was a hero. Yes, he had died. Yes, she would not be able to see him again. But her husband, her man, was a hero. And there was a town in France that celebrated three times a year the sacrifice that he had given to liberate their village and to keep their village from being destroyed by his incoming plane. When you wait, and you wait, and you wait, if you do not give up, your hope will strengthen. Your hope will strengthen. If you do not give up that Jesus is coming soon, and you wait, and you wait, and you wait, your hope will strengthen. Your character will grow. You will experience in this life struggles that will cause you to say, "Where are you, God? When are you coming to deliver me?" And he says, "Don't worry, just wait. Your salvation depends on it." Because we are saved by hope. And if we see, then that hope is nothing. Jesus tells his disciples, there's a secret in the universe. Can't tell you. I can't even tell my guardian angels, because no one can know when I'm coming back. No one can know when that day or that hour shall arrive, because your salvation, your very salvation, depends upon it. We have this hope that burns within our hearts, hope in the coming of the Lord. I love the words of that ancient prophet, Isaiah, looking forward to the end. He utters these words, "Lo, this is our God. We have waited for him." Holy God, we want to see that day. With all of our hearts, we want to see our hope. Keep us to that day. Keep our lamps trimmed and burning. Help us to wait and be able to cry out with all the redeemed, "Lo, this is our God. We have waited for him."